welcome to She Thinks, a podcast where you're allowed to think for yourself. I'm your host, Beverly Hallberg. And on today's episode, Amy Jo Clark and Miriam Weaver, also known as Daisy and Mock, hosts of Chicks on the Right, join us to talk about the fight to stand up for female-only spaces and how J.K. Rowling continues to be a strong advocate for women. We're also going to look at the increased dangers women face as crime increases countrywide and how men infiltrating women's sports and jails put women in harm's way. And a little bit more about our guests before we jump into the conversation. The Chicks on the Right is an American podcast website and social media presence hosted by the politically conservative duo, Mock and Daisy. They do a live video broadcast to more than 1.5 million followers on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, and Twitter every weekday morning, in addition to their once weekly deep dive podcast. Ladies, thank you so much for joining She Thinks.
Thank you for having us.
And 1.5 million followers. That is a lot of followers. How did you all build your program and build it to the reach that it's gotten to?
Mock's so good at this. It's pretty organic. Mock, you're pretty good at this.
And actually, you know, not to brag, but it's 1.5 is actually, I think, on the low side now. If you combine all of our social media platforms, it's a little bit bigger than that now, which is like mind-blowing to even say out loud. Mm-hmm. But we celebrated, just last month, we celebrated our 15th anniversary, and we got started just being best friends who were going out to lunch back in 2008 and talking about Obama's eventual election. We were it was the summer before the election, and we were seeing that he was sort of the star of the world at that point, and we could not understand it. And so even though neither of us had been particularly political up until that point, we became very much kind of obsessed with politics and pop culture and talking about those things as girlfriends do over lunch. And so Amy Jo had an idea not terribly long after the election that we should start a website. And that's what kicked off the whole brand.
Yeah. And I'm sure nothing has changed politically in those 15 years. The country's only gotten better, right? We're doing fantastic, correct?
Yes, we're doing great. We're like just kicking butt on all fronts. Totally. I feel so secure about my children's future.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. You should be secure in having content to cover. That is the one benefit of what we all do. There is a lot to talk about. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you all on is you are obviously strong advocates for women. We're going to get into men competing against women, men getting or being put in jails with females. But I just want to start with this overall picture that crime is increasing. And when crime increases, it's the most vulnerable who suffer the most. We could look at minority communities, think of the elderly, women and children. But of course, with the Lakeland Riley tragic murder, something that President Biden mentioned in his State of the Union address, even though he called her Lincoln Riley, which is a tragic mistake that he made that mistake. A lot of women are more fearful. The media like to focus on the fear women have more than on how did we get here, which the border is a large reason for it. How do you think women in general, though, are feeling across the country as we see crime increase?
I think we're really fearful. I think there's a lot of us that have we've always had our head on a swivel, right? I mean, I think in the past several years, ever since I've been like in my 30s and 40s, I've had more of my head on a swivel. And I teach that to my daughters as well. But then, you know, I think since Biden's been in office, there's been this increased, you know, we're just on like more on edge, as evidenced by, we talked about this last week, a week in the past 2 weeks. I know Mock and I, we did a deep dive on this about how she feels this just overwhelming fear. And that's something that she's never felt before. And it makes her really mad that this is something that we have to feel now. We shouldn't have to feel this way.
I completely agree. I mean, we've talked about it to the extent that I feel like it's a fear that has changed the psyche of the country as a whole. And because, you know, I'm somebody who's been a very positive, optimistic, happy person. And just recently I have found myself feeling emotions that I have not felt before until Joe Biden created this absolute mess at the border and really within the border, right? Within the country. And so he's been saying, I think just recently, that crime is down, violent crime is down more than it has been in the past 50 years. And I'm like, just because no one is getting convicted does not mean that crime is down. And so these mixed messages are ridiculous. Everybody can sense that crime is up. And so I think I can't imagine that I'm the only one or that we're the only two that feel mm-hmm. that increased heightened sense of alarm, just an awareness about our environment all the time, which is not, I don't want to be a paranoid person. And that this administration has created.
And then as a parent, you send your kid off to college thinking, okay, well, this is a, and at UGA, because, you know, Mock's husband went to UGA. I went to another SEC school, and I was a sorority sister of Lake and Riley. And so I think, okay, if, you know, you send your kids to school and you think, well, they're going to be safe on or around these campuses. And you have faith that that's going to be the case. And so as a parent, you look at what happened to her, and it's beyond heartbreaking. Yeah. And then you think that the president of the United States would address this, but instead he's too busy apologizing for saying the word illegal.
Right. And I had a really interesting conversation with a friend this morning. She lives in Washington, D.C. I moved out of D.C. right after the defund the police movement started during the COVID era because it was getting so dangerous. And she's moving across the Potomac into Virginia because she doesn't feel safe even walking from her car to her house, which used to be in a nice neighborhood. I wonder if you could unpack that a little bit. The fear that women face, what does that do to you emotionally when you are on high alert on a regular basis?
I mean, that's something that we have talked about where it changes you as a person, because as we've talked about in other interviews, Daisy and I have sort of switched places. So she's become more of the optimist, more of the, come on, I'm going to show you that silver lining. And it used to not be that way at all. We were completely reversed. And so I hate it. I hate feeling afraid in situations where I never felt afraid before. Walking in my own neighborhood, for example, I've never felt more on edge than I have now. And it's not even just because of the increased crime. It's because of the attitude towards it by the very people who should care. So, I mean, it's the prosecutors, it's the DAs, it's everybody who's just ignoring it because they don't want to bring attention to the fact that it's happening under their watch.
It also changes the way that you raise children. You know, I mean, I think that I probably, if I were raising a child 20, 25 years ago, I would have done it differently then than I do now. And like, I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I can tell you that even in the past several years, if I go into a Target with her, I will tell her, even at 14, I'm like, just don't stray very far from me. And if you're out of my sight, she always has her head on a swivel. She's been trained to look for certain things because I've done that with her. I hate that I have to do that with my daughter, with my daughters, because we have a 34-year-old daughter as well. But I feel like you have to prepare them for society, and our society has degraded because of policies, liberal policies. And so you want to make sure that they are okay in the world when you finally let them be independent or when they go out there on their own. It just stinks that, you know, you have to teach them these things because you don't want a kid to live in fear, you know, but you want to have them have a sense of like a little bit of healthy fear so that they are definitely aware of their surroundings, because you don't want them to ever be in a position where, you know, they can get into trouble. So raising kids is different in this day and age.
Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier about being fearful for your daughter to go to college. That used to be a place that was safe. I've had this thought recently that crime used to have general rules where as long as you did X, Y, and Z and didn't go to these places at these mm-hmm. times, be with a crowd of people, whatever it happens to be, you were fairly safe. For example, I would even think taking public transportation in a large city, I would be around groups of people, even if I didn't know them, because I would think if something happens, they would help me. Mm-hmm. But that's right. Not necessarily the case anymore. I think there's just so many random crimes going on just for the sake of the crime. It's like we can't even follow the rules that even our mothers taught us about right. being safe.
Right. And it used to be that criminals were prosecuted. It used to be that they were held accountable and that you could at least count on that. And you can't count on that anymore. I mean, we've seen on subways that if somebody steps in and tries to help a woman or help people, they get in trouble. And that what kind of message does that send to criminals? Well, I mean, it says to the criminal, go ahead and do it more.
Yeah. And so it's the increased crime that's just taking place across the board. But of course, women are facing another threat, and that is men wanting to be part of female-only spaces. Somebody who's been, just been an amazing advocate for women in this area, who is not a conservative, somebody who calls herself liberal, is J.K. Rowling. And you all put a piece on your website called J.K. Rowling Just Put Feminists in Their Place. And I want to read just a portion of one of the tweets that she sent out that you all commented on that really, I think, succinctly shows how or what she thinks about this. And she tweeted out, telling women and girls they must accept increased risk to themselves to appease male feelings is the very definition of the patriarchy. Very strong statement by J.K. Rowling. She doesn't care who comes after her. The mob comes after her. And she still continues to say what she thinks. Just your thoughts on this tweet and what we're seeing with men wanting to be part of female-only spaces.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say she's been such a great advocate in terms of this whole ridiculous trans ideology movement too. And so even since that tweet, she has been, she's poking the bear. And that's what I love about her, is that she takes no prisoners. She does not care what the consequences are, even in the UK, where she is actually facing potential arrest for misgendering someone. I love that she takes a stand on these issues, and she's such an important voice, liberal or not. It's awesome to have her on the right side of that issue.
Yeah. It's a shame that there are not more women like her. It used to be that's what feminists used to stand for, is they used to stand up for women. And now you see all these quote feminists standing up for men. That's precisely what they're standing up for. They're not, because we look around and we're like, where are the so-called feminists when it comes to these men trampling in our spaces and making women feel less than? Because they fought so hard. I mean, our mothers and our grandmothers, they fought so hard to make sure that we had these spaces. And now they're like, well, just let the men come in and take a seat, ladies. And we're like, where are all the feminists? And so it is very refreshing that she's doing that, but there needs to be, it needs to be more than just conservative women and her, you know?
Correct. And here's what I've wondered though, as you've talked about this, I've wondered what type of response that you have gotten. I know when we've had different guests on this podcast, some of them have transitioned themselves. So they talk about their own situation and how they detransitioned after they realized it was a farce. What they were told as a child to do did not benefit them long-term. We've had athletes on this who have been injured by competing against males. And I always ask them this question, which is, what has the response been like? And of course they talk about the online bullies that they're there, but they always point to the overwhelming support of people who agree with them, who often will say things like, I'm so glad you're speaking out on this. And I'll also describe the fear that they have in speaking out. Do you think we've gotten to the point where people are being more confident in speaking out against men competing with women, the whole trans movement, regardless of what the small minority of bullies may want to say?
I hope so. God, I hope so. Because historically we've been wimps on this. I mean, it's like, it's such a small percentage of people who are doing this, and they, for some reason, they're the loudest. Like, what? I don't get it. And that's, we don't understand that. We have, and I feel like even from a conservative standpoint, over the past 15 years since we've been doing this, we see and hear and, you know, get mail from a lot of people who will say, I agree with everything you say, but I'm just afraid to say it because I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose my standing in society. I'm afraid my kids won't get into this college, or this will happen, or that will happen. People just need to quit being so afraid of everything, because that's what's made us lose this fight, this cultural battle, which is essentially what this is. We're losing because we are afraid, or we aren't afraid, but other people are afraid, and fear has made us lose in this.
I do think there's some pendulums righting itself a little bit on this issue, because I think now you're starting to see that, like always, the activist community has jumped all the sharks, right? And so now that the sharks have been jumped, now people are like, okay, you've gone way too far, and we got to reel this back in. And so now there's sort of this, people are realizing that the emperor is actually naked. And so, and people are starting to become unwilling to participate in the lie that is the emperor wearing really nice clothes. We all know the truth. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's more and more people that are feeling comfortable. And a lot of this is due to Elon Musk, frankly, for creating a forum or a platform, which you're able to say those things on without getting blocked or banned. And so the fact that you can say, you can misgender people on Twitter is, that's a huge, I think this had a huge impact on the pendulum righting itself a little bit.
And there's so much harm that is being done that we're starting to uncover based on this whole movement to put men in female-only spaces. I want to let our listeners know that there is a new series that IWF has put out. It's called Cruel and Unusual Punishment. That's Cruel and Unusual Punishment. And it features real stories from incarcerated women who have been forced to share female-only spaces with men who identify as women. And of course, there have been rapes, sexual assaults, lots of horrible things happening because you're putting men with women in a jail setting. I mean, first of all, what do you think of this? How did we get to the point where men are sharing jail cells with women?
It's nuts. Like this. So Gavin Newsom is going to die on this hill, right? So you've got where you're saying, okay, so a rapist is convicted of rape, a guy, and then he's going to go, I feel like a woman. So let's put him in a women's prison. What kind of madness is this? Like who, it's beyond logic to me. I don't understand how we've gotten to a place where this is even remotely okay to put a rapist or somebody who has been awful to women or convicted of crimes that are terrible to women in a woman's prison where they can do it again. It's insanity.
And it's totally predictable. I mean, the results are completely and utterly predictable. And anybody, you know, anytime you would have said that on the front end of this happening, if you would have said, this is a slippery slope, because if you start accepting that these people identify as women, you're going to end up with these women or these people in women's prisons, and then you're going to end up with all these crimes. They would have, oh, no, that's crazy. That's so mean. You can't assume terrible things about these people. They're just living out their best lives. No, you can absolutely predict with 100% accuracy exactly how this is going to play out. And here we are.
And taxpayers are funding it, which is even more disgusting, right? I mean, taxpayers are like, let me go ahead and facilitate that. Oh my gosh.
Now, what do you say to somebody who you share your opinions like you are today, and they say that you are transphobic, that you just hate the trans movement, the trans people? What is that line of obviously respecting the dignity of others? And we do have rights. All of us has rights as Americans, but also standing up for the right that we have as women to feel safe and protected.
It means as much to me as the word racist lost its luster years ago, because I mean, we get called all the names. I know what reality is. I live in a place that is real and I refuse to entertain other people's delusions. Right. And so if people want to call me transphobic for that, I'm not transphobic. I'm just, if a man or if a young man wants to compete against my daughter in swimming, you know, because he was a terrible athlete as a man, I take offense to that. I absolutely reject it. I reject it. And if people want to stand next to me in solidarity, that's great. But if you are going to buy into the delusion that male is somehow like going to, he all of a sudden one day he just decides he's going to be a woman. He's going to compete as a young woman against my daughter and then take scholarship opportunities away from her that she's worked, you know, 14 years to achieve. I have a huge problem with that. Every feminist, every woman should have a huge problem with that. This is just not okay.
Correct.
Well, and she's absolutely right about the word losing all of its meaning too, because, you know, we've been called literally everything that you can imagine. And so at this point, transphobic is just add that to the list of all the obics and ists that we've been called. It doesn't matter. And we know who we are, and who we are two people who believe wholeheartedly in the fact that you live your life the way you want to live it. If you want to wear women's clothing and put on makeup and do your hair and talk and, you know, talk with a higher voice and pretend you're a woman, you go do that. But the second that you try, you know, mutilating children or trying to convince kids before puberty that they need to start taking life altering drugs for the rest of their lives, that's when we're going to speak up. And it's not transphobic to do that. It's that we care about protecting kids and we care about reality. Mm-hmm. And that's not transphobic. That's just
no. And that's honestly, normal. In 100 years, when they dig your bones up, the truth is the truth.
Well, yeah. Your bio was much longer when I put in all the things you've been called in it. And I was like, no, we don't have time for all of that. We're just going to take it out. I do, before you go, want to switch real quickly to politics. So we did see last week that President Joe Biden gave the State of the Union address. I think that the State of the Union is very angry, is a very angry delivery. And it seemed like a campaign speech. Just curious of your thoughts of the State of the Union, and what does that say about how he's going to run his campaign up until November?
Shaking that rake.
He's shaking the rake. Yeah, get off my lawn. That's basically what it was. It reminds me of that Philly speech he gave with the red background behind him, where he looked like a dictator.
Yes.
Except for he just didn't have that background. He had Mike Johnson behind him, like doing the rolling of the eyes, and he was all of us during that speech. You know, he definitely represented me. He's angry and he's failing and he's flailing. And then now they're going to try to say, oh, well, his age it signifies wisdom. That's what they're going to try to run with, when we all know that this guy is in full blown dementia and they had to hop him up on some sort of amphetamine to get him through that State of the Union.
Well, and it's so funny to me to read all of the Democrat responses to the State of the Union, that just because Biden showed all of this anger and rage, that somehow changes the fact that he's not been a mumbling, stumbling, bumbling fool for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so he can have this one raging night and Democrats are like, see? Everything's fine. But then the very next day, he goes out to campaign wherever in Pennsylvania, and he's stepping all over himself yet again. So whenever he's even the tiniest bit off script, that's when you see the real Biden. And it's true. The strategy here, you know, between now and election time is going to be for them to embrace his age and try mm-hmm. to play off of it. There was an ad that they put out recently where he's joking about it. And he's like, I'm not young. I'm no spring chicken, or whatever it is that he's going to say, but they're going to try to acknowledge it and then use it as some sort of a plus, even though all of us have seen how bad his age has been for this presidency.
Yeah. Ladies, it's purely a stutter. This is all it is. Just a stutter.
Totally. The fact that he spent the first 10 minutes talking about another country during the State of Our Union, that should tell everybody exactly where his priorities lie. And
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that should tell everybody exactly what he believes in. And it's not America.
One of the things I've thought, just as I think about Dr. Jill Biden, allowing her husband to be seen in this light, somebody who obviously is dealing with some form of mental decline. Would you ever put your husbands through that?
Never, ever.
We've been talking about that for years. We talked about it when we did radio, years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And I used to say, this is elder abuse, and people will get mad at us because we used to say that. But now I think it is abundantly clear that that is precisely what she is doing. And she'll do anything she can to retain that power and to be able to live in the White
disgusting.
House. It's gross. Of course we would never do that to our husbands. I can't even imagine. It's gross.
It's cruel. And I blame her and the entire rest of the family. Like, they should be mm-hmm. horrified that this is what they're putting out into the world.
Yeah.
They should be letting him come home and just go to the beach and chill out and
eat some ice cream
and eat his ice cream.
Ride a bike. Not well.
Exactly.
But try.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's lots of things that he could do that I think he would actually prefer doing, but going up there and giving that speech. And I know that his speech, I think that really the point was to try to firm up that Democrat base to show, hey, I still have a lot of vigor. I can do this. But what about the suburban women vote, which is what we always go back to, is that seems like suburban women definitely are the tipping point in so many races these days. They have a choice between Donald Trump and a choice between him and the current president, President Joe Biden. Where do you think suburban women go, and what are the issues that really the candidates need to focus on to secure their vote?
The border, the economy, kitchen table stuff they need to focus on if they want to get suburban women, because most suburban women, I would imagine, are the ones who hold the purse strings, and they are the ones dealing with actual everyday policies, which, you know, the Democrats are going to focus on abortion and stuff like that. And I honestly, suburban women are the ones who are dealing with everyday financial stuff in their households. That's where they need to get them, is the economy. You cannot get away from that as a Democrat candidate right now. Things really stink in this country economically. And also when it comes to stuff like sending your kids to college and doing just everyday stuff, those are the policies that Republicans need to focus on, the border safety, things like that. And I hope that they do.
Yeah, well, I just want to thank you both for joining us on our show today to talk about all things issue related to women and politics. We so appreciate it. Again, it's Daisy and Mock, the Chicks on the Right. Do check out their program. Once again, it's every day and you can find it wherever you find your normal podcast, video podcast. You can check them out there. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us. Before you go, IWF does want you to know that we rely on the generosity of supporters like you. An investment in IWF fuels our efforts to enhance freedom, opportunity, and well-being for all Americans. So please consider making a small donation to IWF by visiting IWF.org/donate. That's IWF.org/donate. Last, if you enjoyed this episode of She Thinks, do leave us a rating or a review. It does help. We love it if you shared this episode for your friends can know where they can find more She Thinks. From all of us here at IWF, thanks for watching.